You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello there, friends. Thanks for tuning back in. This one is a fun one, right? I'm actually curious how many of you out there had seen this before. This seemed not like a cult hit. That's a weird way to put it, but one of those ones that you were either in or you were out on. You know, people knew about this or didn't. And, you know, it's Christopher Lloyd. I love Christopher Lloyd. My favorite movie probably is Back to the Future. And to see it the way I saw it, like this, you know, it's interesting to see him outside the role of, you know, Doc. But anyway, we're still chugging along here. Next week, we will have a bonus episode, just like we did during the summer. If you weren't paying attention this summer because it said reruns, we actually released a couple new episodes. So the idea is that once a month we'll release a bonus, and next week is a bonus. And so tune in then to see it. And yeah, I just want to thank you guys for listening, and I appreciate all you do. Keep rating and reviewing and checking in the Facebook page and voting for stuff that might come up later. Thanks.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special commercial for We Podcast and We Know Things.
Wow, a commercial?
Yes, Sam, a commercial. You do this to me every time. Anyway, we are We Podcast and We Know Things, the single source for all of your nerdy news in gaming, TV, film, music, and all things pop culture. Heck, even wrestling. We're basically spreading the good word of nerd one episode at a time.
Check us out here on the ESO Podcast Network and wherever fine podcasts are, including the iOS podcast app, CastBox, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram to keep up with all the goings-on in the nerdy world. Now back to your ESO Network podcast.
Who's better than us?
Hey everyone, it's Chris and Mike from the Recasting Couch, the podcast where we take our favorite movies and discuss what they would be like with new actors in all the lead roles. Hey, Mike, tell them where they can find us on social media.
You can find our website at therecastingcouch.com or on Twitter at recastingpod. And of course, you can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Android, or anywhere else you find your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, if there's a service that's not posting our pod, you let us know and we will rectify that immediately.
Damn right.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Watched the sequel to Back to the Future 4 after he gets dumped. We watched Camp Nowhere. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Opinion Fainted Childhood, and on panel we've got
Matthew W. Quinn, whose teen horror novel The Thing in the Woods has some very heavily armed teens, not just 14, 12-year-olds with super soakers.
You know, after 18 months, you'd think you'd have this, like, pitch down.
Well, you gotta customize it for each one.
Ah, there you go. So this, yeah, you know what? I'll give it to you.
Okay. I'm Kieko Childs. I'm new here. I'm waving right now. You can tell I'm new at this.
Thanks, Kieko. And
I'm Thomas Herman of the Brothers Herman and host of the Geekly Oddcast, a member of the ESO Network.
Yeah, so we're all in the family here. Before we get into the plot this time, since this is one of the last precocious kid movie of the month, why don't you tell us why you chose this, and as a kind of our sweeps, our last episode of the Precocious Kid movies.
I remember when this movie came out. I did not see it in theaters. I somehow could not convince my parents to take me to see this at the age of 8. But I did manage to rent this on VHS at Blockbuster. And I think I watched it more than a few times as it popped up on TV. And I don't know, I kind of enjoyed the idea of just kind of getting to go off and do my own thing. Not that coming back and watching this as an adult, the realities of it make any sense whatsoever to my adult mind, which isn't that much farther along, but, you know, we'll go with it.
I will say one thing about this, which is that I didn't understand acting, really. I saw this movie because I think my mom probably helped me find it, whatever. But I liked Christopher Lloyd from Back to the Future.
Christopher Lloyd was the big part, yeah.
And so, like, my joke was only half true because I'm like, oh boy, Doc Brown is in another movie, because I didn't get it. Because, like, the other movie that's like this that I saw was Bushwhacked, wherein Daniel Stern is essentially playing the same character he plays in Home Alone, so it still kind of works. But Chris Lloyd here is just like a derelict music man type.
So this movie made $13 million, which is about the... which, this is not a blockbuster film, so we're not talking about a movie that took that much to make. So it made about in the same range as Heavyweights.
Yeah.
So basically what I'm thinking is the majority of the budget went to Christopher Lloyd, who needed a paycheck. So. And then everything else was like just paying for land and a few young child actors.
Yeah, I mean, and I think Tom Wilson is in it because of a favor. He's like, Chris Lloyd's like, you gotta get Biff. He needs the money. He's good.
You gotta come back to me, Biff.
Well, and Emmett Walsh is in here wandering through Well, I mean, he's just here to make sure he gets money for a gremlin, and that's kind of him. Anyway, we should get into this. I won't call on anyone in particular, but some people actually took notes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we got pages.
I'm actually surprised at the amount I was able to remember this movie.
Some of
from
us were
childhood.
Prepared for this.
Yeah.
I am quite prepared.
So, since it's your first time, do you want to give us a plot synopsis?
Oh, gosh.
You don't have to, but you took the notes. Do it.
My notes are not on the plot.
You're fine. So Matt, why don't you give us the plot and we'll come back to you.
Okay, so our protagonist is Morris Mud Himmel, played by Jonathan Jackson. And he's going to be sent off to computer camp, which he hates.
Camp Chippewa.
Micro Chippewa.
Micro Chippewa.
I have to say, my husband said that camp sounded awesome and he would have just gone to that camp.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong.
And meanwhile, his friend Zach, who's kind of a low-level juvenile delinquent, is going to be sent off to military camp again. And they have two girls they hang out with. There's Gabby and Trish. Gabby, who her parents are convinced she's fat and keep sending her to fat camp, even though she's not. And there's
Trish. She's the pseudo-fat kid who's not really fat.
And there's Trish, whose parents just want to get rid of her. And then Mud, they're all just kind of lamenting this. And Mud is like, what if we made our own camp? And then things take a turn. He ends up blackmailing their former drama teacher, Dennis Van Welker, Christopher Lloyd, to be the adult front man for their scheme. So he keeps showing up in different personas to convince the parents to give them money.
From a con perspective, he's the roper.
Yeah.
Okay. To set up their own summer camp, which basically you see us have a bunch of middle schoolers running around as super soakers by themselves. He just sits in a cabin by the lake doing who knows what.
Inspecting jelly beans.
Oh, yeah, he's just doing
listening
that.
To Churchill.
I did take notes about
and
that.
Listening to
I
Churchill.
I mean, okay, we're going to get to your notes because he is terrifying. Like, that's why I'm thinking he's killed before, because he's looking through a jeweler's glass with tongs, and he's looking at jelly beans, Mud. It's the only way to purify. And you're just like, all right there, buddy.
And he's also flirting with a local doctor.
Which we'll get to. So, how do we start this movie? Oh my god. We gotta start with Mud. Mud has the most
beautiful hair. Mud is our major protagonist. He honestly is.
They have the most beautiful hair on boys,
you know what?
Back then.
That is actually my first impression, the first note that I took.
Please, what is it?
The mullet is back and it is here to stay. Mud had the most beautiful hair.
That was a bowl cut. That was a bowl cut, not a mullet. That was
mullet.
It went down to his shoulders, son.
Yeah, but it came down. It didn't. The problem is, it wasn't short in the front, and it wasn't business in the front and fun in the back. It was everywhere down.
Oh, there was no fun to be had. But it was a Sunday school mullet. That's what I'll call it. It was a Sunday because it was the kind you could take out, and he had his like herbal essence shampoo all throughout 7 weeks of summer camp because it never got at all skanky.
Can we just say that there's one thing I could think of? If you take a bunch of middle school and high schoolers and send them out into the wilderness, I think the first thing that would stop, at least for all the boys, is showering. And that didn't happen.
Yeah, because these really aren't high schoolers. They're like middle school. Although there is one sexy prank that happens in the pre-credit sequence, which is something.
Well, yeah, Mudge has got to be looking around at most 12 or 13, but he has a vocabulary of a 16 or 17-year-old.
The thing is you can at least play off of that, because I knew quite a few people, and myself being one of them, that did not look their proper age until much later. So at least you can play off that, because you've got people that look old, like that are older, but actually look a lot younger. So there's wiggle room.
Point to Quinn here, though. He was 12 when this movie came out. 12! And you can see that in the scene at the end when the quote-unquote fat girl, who's actually fairly thin, kisses him, and she's about a foot and a half taller than he is.
Heck, even if she was 12, I could buy that she's a foot and a half taller than him. Like,
poor Jonathan Jackson, who is now on Nashville as Avery Barkley.
Not a bad-looking fellow as an adult, actually.
No, he's fine. Yeah. He still has the mullet.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, that was actually something about this movie that was interesting to me, because you may remember exactly when you watched it, you know. I don't remember the exact moment, but I always remember knowing the movie and sort of knowing what happens. And Zach was my childhood movie crush.
Oh, no kidding.
And I thought that it was from, you know, like a collection of movies that I saw in my childhood. But I looked it up, and apparently this was the only one that he was in that I saw. So it was this movie that Andrew Keegan was my childhood crush.
Also, compared to last week when we had a character, Buckwheat, who was in Independence Day, he plays the brother, or the son of Randy Quaid in Independence Day. He's the kid in the RV scene. He's like, "Dad, wake up, you're late again." That's him.
What?
Yeah, Zach, the character who plays Zach, Andy Keegan. Yeah, no. And he still, if you look at him today, he looks the same. I mean, he's the adult
version.
Does
he still have the hair? That...
It's wispy.
Yeah, it's a little shorter.
He's a good-looking guy. But he has, like, the kind of little fencing mustache thing. Like, ooh, he's a good-looking dude. Yeah. I'll give you that. So he plays a good bad boy.
The only other big actor I can think who came out of this movie, this is the film debut of Jessica Alba.
Yeah. And it's kind of a blink and you miss it, because she's... she's cute.
She's in like three scenes. Like you see her as like they all descend on Mud's house when his supposed friend, who's not really his friend, apparently told everyone.
I didn't notice her then. I noticed her.
Yeah, I saw her. Well, I was because I'd seen the clip, and so I saw her there. And then when they're in the lake, I see her. And then I think I might see her one more time during the Mud Olympics, and that's it.
Well, and for Star Trek fans, we have a captain and number one, because Jonathan Frakes is in it, and Kate Mulgrew.
Yeah, Janeway and Riker.
I have a theory that this is actually just a simulation on the holodeck.
I like
it's
that.
Captain Janeway, just, you know, kind of having
the best
some fun.
Part is, this is a year before Voyager even started, which means she probably had just been offered the role as this movie came out, and she managed to get like Jonathan Frakes, because it was probably shot on a Universal backlot or something like that, and they just yanked him over.
Well, and I bet you TNG didn't end until a year or two after this, right?
Yeah,
94.
Yeah.
So I bet you it's one of these things where she got the film role, like, because I'm sure she was acting, but in between getting the part and then getting Janeway, they still had to film this, because she knew she was going to be a captain. So she's like, "Hey, Frank, do you want to come?" And he goes, "Yeah."
Do you know the funny part is, so watching this, knowing what I know now, this is a Disney film.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Like it's distributed by Buena Vista, and it's one of like Disney's subsidiary film production studios. I'm like, this is Disney through and through, but not Disney.
Well, I mean, this and Nickelodeon movies all felt the same, like, because this is all like kids need to be like kids are in charge, but like the smallest thing happens, like if this was a real summer camp, someone's dying, like the conflict comes in and Christopher Lloyd realizes he's up Schitt's Creek when all of a sudden
when Mud shows up with a second degree burn,
he has fireworks on his head on a skateboard, he falls and burns himself, which is not great, but that's the best case scenario. There's literally a kid shoots a rocket off into this camp building. Everyone burns down. Like,
how did someone not end up pregnant by the end of this?
What I actually
that's because they're all like 12.
The scene when happens, I noticed one of the kids said, "Who would have thought something like this could happen with harmless flares and roaming candles?"
Yes, I enjoyed him the most because he's the one that just kind of like broke the fourth wall and goes, "Gee, I don't know how that happened."
and then he gets the shit out of town. Actually, what's her name?
Wait, did he show up again after that point for the rest?
No, that was his, I think he did die. He's the one they buried in the swamp. No, but the two girls, Marionette Peterson, who's the blonde one who's in a bikini half the time, and then makes out with your boyfriend?
Zach.
They're both like 15 and 16. So, yeah, they're actual high schoolers. Zach tries to buy beer. Like, he knows what's going on.
and he rebuilds somehow in very short order, restores a 57 Chevy Bel Air.
And paints it.
That's the part that, like, we never saw happen. I'm like, I can see restoring an engine and fixing all of that. How the hell did you paint this thing?
And Doc Brown's like, "Don't worry, buddy. I'll bring it back when you're an adult." He's gone. He's in Mexico doing blow in Tijuana, man. Oh, I love this movie. Okay, so we should get to some of these set pieces. Mud doesn't want to go to camp.
Nope.
So he runs into, almost said Macaulay Culkin, Chris Lloyd selling squeezy cheese and doing like a fast five. Like he's doing a tight five based around a fish, a hook. I'm glad it's Chris Lloyd because looking at this movie, It should have been Jim Carrey, and I'm glad it's not Jim Carrey because he would have just been dry humping like wah 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 across the screen.
Dry humping the screen, like yeah.
Oh, gross. Chris Lloyd nails this movie.
He's the best part. He's hilarious.
Yeah, every scene he's in is pure gold.
Oh gosh, the car wash. Yes, the car wash. My favorite.
Maybe 130, maybe 140 degrees.
Well, and the thing is, it's Tom Wilson looking at him, and Tom Wilson knows Chris Lloyd. I feel like he gets along with Chris Lloyd. Chris Lloyd has never said a bad thing about any actor, possibly except for the one he got kicked off Back to the Future.
Yes.
But Tom Wilson has to keep a straight face while shit is going down. And it's the best. It's
wonderful.
Oh, complimentary hot wax!
All this told me was that the amount of money that Christopher Lloyd got for this movie, which I'm sure was substantial, was not enough to get him in more of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, because he's in a relatively short amount, maybe 25 minutes total.
But, you know, credit where credit's due. It's like a Bryan Cranston part. He showed up for the movie.
Oh, no. He did not phone it in at all.
And you give him credit for that because he could have just taken a check and done nothing, but you get, like, the elasticity of his face. Like, when the wax comes out, you just see his jaw drop and he goes, "Oh!" Again, it's like Back to the Future 3 when the thing catches fire and he's just agape. He has this rubberness to his face that he doesn't have to do.
And he can do all those personas of the different camp counselors he pretends to be to get money.
Good segue. At this point, the main four show up at Chris Lloyd's
trailer.
And he announces to us that he's a disgraced teacher. And he wants to be around kids again or something.
No. At first, no. This is not true. He show up. He claims to be the building inspector checking the carbon content of the rust on the trailer because he's full of it. The man shows up as the collector for the Caribbean Yellow Gremlin. So apparently he got a loan and the payment out was about $5,700.78.
Something like that.
Yeah. So Mud pretends to be his son to help to get the guy to go away. Zach hotwires the car and gets it off. And so when he's trying to like get away from them and not help them, Mud blackmails him.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Welker wanted anything to do with any of this. They blackmailed him into this.
Yeah. But I think it was earlier when they were talking about that after the Easy Cheese skit. One of the girls said that he was their older sister's drama teacher, and he got fired for trying to do a Silence of the Lambs.
He got fired because he was very bizarre, and then part of that was because he tried to do Silence of the Lambs as a musical.
Candace and I, my wife, were working on the song that they were singing, and I was working on It Rubs the Lotion on the Skin as a musical number, and frankly, I think it would work. I would love to see this. Also, he screams like there's some other reason, and that's what they told the kids. I'm just going to throw it out there, because it turns out he's the greatest con man who's ever lived.
He is. He's wonderful.
So essentially, he breaks it down. We don't want to go to camp. But if you help us convince our parents that we'll go to something else, we'll figure out this other camp. We'll help you in on the thing, whatever it is. So they convince the first four. Instead of a computer camp, Mr. Wozniak shows up in a... It's a Bill Gates parody, right? Like the horrible sweaters and the big glasses. Fine. Then you have someone doing, you know, God, I even know the guy they're trying to do, but they have an acting
General
coach.
Patton?
No, he's talking about the acting coach. The Russian, yeah.
It's a method. I'll look it up, but I know what you're talking about. Then we have General Patton showing up, and he looks like some sort of war dog. It's great, you know.
And then the fat camp where he looks like a Richard Simmons knockoff.
And you get the feeling that Chris Lloyd's like, I just want to go back to my hometown and do a local play again. Like, he's done with this. But whatever. It's Stanislavski. That's what I'm
saying. Yeah. But I mean, method. And he pulls off all of these. And like, well, first of all, it tells me that all of these kids' parents are idiots.
Yes.
Because at the end of like when he's doing the military camp one, it's like, is that, do you take, you know, credit or check?
He said check or plastic.
Check or plastic. He's like, cash. And he just looks at him and goes,
no, all right. But, I mean, I went to Boy Scout camp more than once. There are things you look into. These parents are just like, get these kids out of my house.
Well, Trisha's parents pretty obviously are. Like, they keep getting her confused with her sister.
No, just her dad. The mom is fine. She knows which one's which. The dad... Mm-hmm. is oblivious. Just completely.
They're horrible people. All of these are horrible people, and the kids are also horrible people. Like,
the other part is that only one parent for each kid is really well written. So Mud's dad is a well written character. His mom is a background set piece.
Yeah.
Whereas the Trish. The blonde,
yep.
Her mom is a well-written character.
Captain
she understands.
Janeway.
Yes, exactly. Whereas her dad is an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just like one parent for each one because we don't have the writing staff to do anything more.
Like, and again, this movie is not about them, but they didn't think anything through. This movie just kind of sputters along.
So they convince their idiot parents to give this man cash so that they can go to camp. But not go to camp. So they can just hang out for the summer, the four of them. And somehow...
It leaks.
It leaks because Mud's friend figures out there is no such camp. And then he tells...
Because there's a directory of actual real camps that exist. And Binary Pines is not on the list.
There was always that one friend who sucked.
And this one... I never liked through the whole movie.
Yeah, no, he kept stalking that one girl,
he
basically.
He did. He's creepy. Like, it would be great to have Abby on this episode because, like...
But he's the one who's the victim of the sexy prank.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good end that he...
It is a good end that he gets his just desserts, yes.
So, at the end, it's what, 20, 25 kids?
Yeah, and so we're saying...
Which we're not introduced to any of the rest of them.
Well, no, and so I think I'm going to take a brief moment to segue into the fact, so we're talking about, because they make a joke, it's about $3,000 for summer camp. So let's say there's 25, 30 kids, so we're talking about between 75 and 90 grand for summer camp. These cabins are dilapidated, so we're not talking a lot of money. Like, the man who ran this camp didn't look like he was looking for a lot for these.
Burgess Meredith, the penguin from the old Batman show. And from Rocky.
Now, first of all, 90 grand does not fit in a wallet. I'm just going to say that right now. Even if it's in hundreds, there's no way you're stacking that much cash in your wallet.
No.
So Mud did not give all the money to these kids. So I think Mud walked away with more money at the end of this summer. Like, he and Welker made out.
I think Welker made out because I think Welker's like, don't worry, Mud, I'll hold the rest of the cash for you. Kids don't know what's going on. No. And he just leaves. And he had a plan. You know this.
That's the real story. The real story is that all of these kids show up to camp. Welker leaves them with just enough money to survive if they only buy food. And Welker disappears.
I'm shocked Welker stuck around until shit went down because it would have been, like, the movie I was expecting is that, like, when Mud gets bullied a little bit, he shows up, like, goes down, and Welker's cabin's empty, and he's gone.
Well, I think Welker had an arc that he starts out as just someone who just a slacker who doesn't really give a rip at anything, and then he realizes he goes along. He was a teacher. He has responsibilities, and that's why he tries to take the fall for them at the end by claiming he was a cult leader.
You're trying very hard.
You're trying so hard to justify this movie that no one else cared this much.
The problem is
he has a whole conversation with the doctor where he's like, I wanted to inspire people.
He said a lot to get into someone's pants.
He also admitted to being a sexual dynamo a few scenes later, which was creepy.
And makes prison rape jokes to a 12-year-old, too. You know, a 200-pound fiancé named Duke.
I can get my penis up to 1.21 gigawatts.
It's a different movie.
So if I go back to the money just briefly. So the money gets split among all of the kids. Let's just say they got to keep most of their money. They go on the biggest of spending sprees, which rivals the blank check for the amount of shit that shows up at their front door. First of all, you can't just call Circuit City and say, I've got a load of cash, bring me stuff. That doesn't work.
And I mean, I just love this line of like Teamsters unloading trucks and kids are just paying them off in hundreds. And they're like, you know what? This seems above level.
And I mean, they are Teamsters. No.
You're not wrong.
And not one person talks.
No one gives a shit.
And I just, when you look at all of the abundance of stuff, there was a boat that they bought sitting in the lake that was not there when they started, and it was a new boat. Boats are not cheap. Like,
none of this is cheap. None of it makes sense.
No, none of it makes sense.
That's why Chris Lloyd wanted to be paid up front. He's like, they're going to fuck this up. I need to...
It's like, give me a check, and when it clears, I will be in your movie.
Give me mine, and you can have yours.
It's almost like life imitating art.
Yeah.
Yes, life... Yeah.
Oh my. So, the one thing I want to talk about, which we haven't gotten to, is you mentioned it in passing, which is the Gremlin. The Gremlin has been in arrears for apparently 22 years, something like that. It's a 70-something Gremlin, right?
26 years in arrears. He made 3 payments on a four-year loan.
And then he left town, and he's being hunted by Emmett Walsh.
This is how much a geek I am. Like, I actually rewound so I could hear the number of payments and make the calculations, and I'm like, why am I doing this?
Yeah,
this
no. Matter.
You know why? Because you're an adult. Because I found myself doing the same thing throughout this movie. I was, like, making a budget for these kids. I was like, who's cooking their food? How often do they go grocery shopping? She's making omelets with mushrooms. Adding up ingredients, but as a kid you don't do that.
No,
you're just like, oh, that's like my fantasy, you know. Yeah. Living in a camp by myself for...
Well, what we should have had is a Pizza Hut scene or something where they just order like 30 pizzas, because that's what kids are thinking. Like, the idea that this girl is making omelets for 25 kids.
Yeah, sure she is.
Well, actually, that was because they had gotten tired of the candy.
She had gotten tired of it. No one else. Yeah. And that was the only way they could get to... Somehow this skinny girl, who they tried to make look frumpy, actually lost weight over the summer. That's the only way we could get there.
Just get clothes that fit, lady. Like, because she's wearing, like... But she's wearing sweatshirts in the middle of summer that are from her dad's, like, closet.
Yes.
They have... They're the most... She's dressed like a cartoon. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but... The fact is, her mother's getting her body dysmorphia. She's like, you fat cow! And you're just like, this girl.
Yeah, this movie sends mixed signals on that, because I thought that her mom was just insane and thought she was fat when she wasn't. And then, but yeah, and she's like, I don't want to eat junk food anymore. Like, she's character arc is she's abandoning unhealthy habits she doesn't really seem to have in the first place.
Well, then Mud calls her fat, right? Because she's like losing weight. And she goes, don't worry, kids will respect you. He goes, and don't worry, when you lose a few pounds, you might get a boyfriend. And she's just like, oh, Mud.
And he also implied that she might grow something else.
Grow chest. No, he didn't. It wasn't implication.
Oh, he didn't imply that?
He just said it. He just said, you might grow some chests. Like, I was,
and,
like,
and then date the kind of boys who hang me up by my underwear. So it's like some self-loathing for being a geek in there.
Oh, he's the ultimate self-loather.
I played that move when I was in high school too. It's fine. Man, you're too hot for me. We should never make out.
Did it work?
Kind of. Kind of did.
Okay, well, you weren't 12.
I played that a lot more.
Yeah. It worked. I was in marching band in 15. You know, I was Zach or whatever. Don't look at me like I was Zach. He was just 15. That's why I used him as an example.
He was a lot taller.
Zach's
15.
A bad boy.
He's a lot taller.
I was not
at 12.
A bad boy. Although he likes nerds.
He's a fake bad boy, which is the best kind.
He's pretending to be a bad boy to impress some obnoxious kids. You know, the whole fake bullying.
Right.
They're both just standing there. Oh no! Please don't flush me down the toilet.
I really liked that too. I thought that was a good.
I like that too. I mean,
that was an early '90s trope I did enjoy. It was the bully that wasn't a bully. You know, that was very early '90s. Like,
well, I mean, and to your point, this movie has a lot of the tropes of the movies we've talked about, of course.
Oh yeah.
The difference is that the strong characterization of Chris Lloyd helps. A lot of the bad parts of the movies we talked about, there's no strong male or adult, not male, but
just
specifically
adults.
Adult character. Like in Casper, there's no characterization of all of Bill Pullman other than he's kind of a coward, he's figuring it out, but he's almost never in scenes with the kids. Matilda had Danny DeVito. When he was in the scene, it was good. When the teachers were in the scene, it was good. But when it was Matilda by herself, nothing happens. Like you said, this movie really only works when Chris Lloyd is around. And the conflict is sorted out by someone who can kind of act so, circles around these
kids. You made a joke before we actually started recording, and I'm going to harken back to it even though the listeners won't know.
Dude, take my joke. That's good.
Which is that when you said is that kids at that age range, which would be me, who claimed to like Doctor Who were full of shit. So I'm going to harken back to Doctor Who for just a moment, because when at the end of the fourth Doctor reign, something happened because the writers got exceptionally lazy and I guess weren't being paid or just got really lazy. So they would write a script, and then in the middle of the script they would be like, Tom Baker acts like the Doctor here. Like Tom Baker is Tom Baker here, or something stupid like that, and just let Tom Baker go. This movie is, we need Christopher Lloyd, and Christopher Lloyd's it up right here.
Yeah.
Because this is not a complete script. This is not a complete plot. This is not a four-act structure. It is missing so much to complete this film.
There's a beginning and a middle, and then halfway through the middle, it just says, let's do things that kids want to do. And so literally they're like, well, let's have a set piece where they're swimming. And then they're like, literally, there's someone in the back going like, well, what they're going to do after swimming? What if it's storming and they figure something else out? Like,
and then there's a build up to a climax, an immediate build up to climax, not even a steady grade, like raise. And then it's like, parents are coming. We have to deal with this. Okay, we figured it out.
We actually watched this movie over two nights because we have a baby, and that's what you do when you have a baby.
That makes sense.
So we watched a little over an hour or right at an hour the first night, and we were like, this is just a bunch of kids playing at a camp.
Yeah.
And then the next night it was like immediately it was the parents are coming, but it was like the movie was almost over by that point.
Yeah. And there's no reason. It's not like there's a parent who keeps trying to come or a couple parents who keep trying to come. It's mentioned once,
right,
and then forgotten. And then they're like, we need to end this movie somehow. Montage.
Yeah, and they all do all the stuff they're trying to avoid in the first place.
Yeah.
So I'm going to toss a movie in that would have been a great duo to kind of merge this with, because it's very similar in style, is if we had added like Heavyweights as a watch on, because they're very similar in how they work. It's, you know, kids headed off to camp, bunch of shenanigans ensue, but a much better build up with an antagonist and a climax. Like, I mean, it's crazy and ridiculous. Both are. But I feel like Heavyweights set the stage a lot better than this one did.
Well, and Heavyweights has a villain as Ben Stiller. Who, because it's all set within a fan camp. And it's Judd Apatow, right? Yeah, it is. And Steve Brill. But
made $16 million. I was really bored by the end of this movie. I enjoyed it. And I was literally going through box office mojo. How much did this cost to make?
Like, yeah, it started to kind of drag and fizzle out at the end. Although I did like his cult leader routine. Like, go, I am the guru, have a tequila.
I very much enjoyed the references I did not get as a child from Christopher Lloyd. That I did enjoy.
Well, and I mean, that's to me why it reminded me of like a Jim Carrey bit or a Robin Williams bit, where they're just like, go for it. We've got nothing for you to say. Just, we need you to convince people that you're doing something.
You know, it's very possible. I feel like because it could have been Jim Carrey, Christopher Lloyd, or Robin Williams, and they just walked around with a check and said, here's a check with your name on it. Be in our movie. Is it enough?
And yeah, this is how much we can afford to pay you. And he's like, why not? There's a movie I want to see in this that isn't the movie, because Tom Wilson doesn't matter. He's the cop who's 10 steps behind. He just looks good. He looks good in a suit. He looks good as a cop.
Are you talking the Repo Man?
No. I'm talking specifically about M. Emmett Walsh, who's like, no, I want to retire in October with a perfect record.
Repo Man.
And he's just walking around with a cowboy hat. And the first time I was introduced to him was as a hardscrabble detective in Blood Simple, like as an adult, like going back. And I was like, oh, M. Emmett Walsh is a badass. Like, he's just someone who's seen things. And here he's like trying to track down a gremlin. I'm like, oh, people who don't pay, he just is murdered. Like, there's just a graveyard filled with
I have a perfect record. And you're like,
how is that possible? I've solved all of these missing cases. They get closed when I'm done. You're just like,
But I did love it. He goes, can write the rest off against expenses. And I'm like,
well, because he goes, you're a little short. He goes, you're a little fat. And mud is the next one to disappear.
No, what I enjoyed he was, just like, eats that was mud. Such a stupid joke. And I was like, but clever.
Yeah.
I was like, I enjoyed that. I was like, this is the best joke of all movie.
Well, and that's the closest thing to a real kid joke, because he goes, well, you're a little short. He goes, well, you're fat. Because, like, again, we're about to get to a scene where he's about to first base it, like his first kiss, and he's a foot shorter than the girl. So he is short. And just, I mean, I get it. He's getting kicked around.
No, yeah.
You know what? Mud deals with the adults well. And I would have loved to see, like, what is it, Paper Moon? You know, a con movie where there's an adult and a kid, and it's just Mud and Welker just going around the country scamming people? Better sequel.
No, I did enjoy the end of the movie, which was Call Me Next Summer.
Yeah.
I love that. That was just like, or no, actually, the one I thought was like $20,000, and I was like, they're planning their next con.
Yes.
Like, this is what this look is.
Ocean's 12.
Where the kid is 12.
Well, I was kind of expecting this to be like School of Rock, like how School of Rock ended, where they let him set up his own like after school program, where the epilogue is he's running the summer camp.
Yeah, fine. They're like, he literally just drives out of movie town. I mean, you have something, but I do like the idea of like Ocean Age 12, or just like, all right, Mud, this time I'm going to be a handicapped veteran and you're going to get the money. Like, he just, there's just something on the verge of him just like, if he doesn't get that next score, he's going to be like, you know, like he needs to hit up. It's just the best.
Meanwhile, if you don't hit up this score, you're going into the orphanage, Mud.
We're sending you back, Mud. You just can't pick him up like you used to. My impression's getting worse.
I think it's good.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I like to have a fan. See me at Cineprov. So the one thing we kind of mentioned in passing is that Mud gets burned. So they go to a doctor who I was pretty sure at first, like, oh, they're going to take them to like a mob doctor who's actually a veterinarian. But this is actually like a legit 90s doctor. She has long, curly red hair, wearing cut-off acid-washed jeans. It's 90s Reba McEntire or something. Like, it's great. She's fun. She's charming.
She's also wore a crop top.
And a crop top. Girl. It's the 90s all
driving
over
around
her.
In a Jeep.
And she's a nun, which is kind of weird.
Well, because Chris Lloyd takes her up right away.
Well, no, because she was a nun in Sister Act.
No, shit.
She was the shy nun.
No, oh, my.
The 90s just turned for me.
Oh, my goodness.
And last week, we did Little Rascals with Whoopi Goldberg. So
I've seen too much of a
nun. It is full circle. No. And she went from being a shy nun to having one-night stands with vagabonds.
Well, this one went past the one-night stand.
She drove.
That's
off
in, true. That's
she drove did off drive into off the into sunset. The sunset. Yeah,
with a guy who's 20 years older than she is.
Yeah.
Chris Lloyd looks like a well-worn catcher's mitt this whole movie, and
claims to be a sexual dynamo on screen with a 12-year-old right next to him.
I'm a sexual dynamo, Mud.
I didn't make up the sexual dynamo part, and you're like,
girl. But
that's what she said, Mr. Van Welker.
So she's treating Mud, and Christopher Lloyd's looking at Highlights magazine. He goes, quiet, I'm looking for 6 more weasels. And he goes, check over there. There's a magazine for an adult. It's a Newsweek. There's 12 weasels in there. Gotta laugh.
That was funny. I did enjoy. There was a line I did enjoy. Mud walks into Welker's cabin to like help out, and he's listening to Churchill's speech to Parliament right after Dunkirk.
Yeah,
and it's and he's like, "Who's that?" Oh, it's Winston Churchill, the Jimi Hendrix of the spoken word. Who's Jimi Hendrix? The Michael Jordan of the electric guitar. And I was like, I enjoyed that even more as an adult now that, because as a kid, I did not know who Hendrix was. And I did not know, like, you know, I didn't know who Churchill was.
And the movie plays a joke on the kids in the next scene. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Because it's sunrise or whatever, it's daytime in the next cut. And there's a kid on the roof playing the national anthem in Jimi Hendrix's style.
Yes, he does.
And you're just like, see, the movie plays a joke
on
us. It does.
No, it's like, this is clever. There was a writer back there who had talent. He was not the lead writer, but he was there.
And this is interesting because of the five movies we've done, my science project is kind of just like a boob comedy parody thing. But it and this one are the only ones that are original scripts, because Casper is a remake of an old property. Little Rascals is just a bunch of old bits from the 30s and 40s. And Matilda is a book. So this one actually has a chance to stretch its legs, its little joke toesies out, and have fun with it. And I kind of enjoyed this movie because of it. It's weird when you realize, oh, Chris Lloyd should not be around these kids. And, I mean, he's not a bad person, but he's also not a camp counselor, because he does not care. He has his go bag packed. He's got his 20 grand, and he's gone.
He is ready to go from the beginning.
And the second Parents' Day f***s up, he's loading his car. He's like, the cops are coming, bud! I have my go bag. Where's yours? Goodbye.
I actually was thinking about this, because I can only think of one other actor with a check you could have gotten to do this movie, and who would have done it the right level of justice. And that's Patrick Stewart. Because Patrick Stewart doesn't say no to anything.
Oh my god.
And like, because honestly, when Christopher Lloyd is scrubbing his toothbrush against the side of the trailer and puts it back in his mouth, I was like, and I'm like, and drama teacher that goes the wrong way, I'm like, I could have seen Patrick Stewart as the head of this,
Captain,
and it would have
Picard.
Been absolutely
and
wonderful.
Frank, shows up still, and Janeway shows up still, and instead of M. Emmett Walsh, it's Ian McKellen as the guy trying to get the car back. He's like, you know, I know where this car is hidden.
And Geordi could have been the sheriff. Like, it's... LeVar Burton. It would have been wonderful.
Oh, my God. And if Data was the principal that fired him?
We don't have background checks in the 24th century, Mud.
Like, because it was the only thing that popped through my head as I'm going through this, is the only other person I would want for this is Patrick Stewart.
I mean, seriously, what were you thinking with this camp? How are you even eating? I got rations with me. You idiot kids. Fine, whatever. I've got my 20 grand.
But like, seeing him there with the jelly bean listening to Winston Churchill, I see all of it.
Oh my god. It's just like, Mr. Data, play a salsa. Like, he's just like, he's having just a little bit of fun.
I just had one of those Oddcast moments, like, what if we recast this today? And I'm like, just give me...
Better. Instead of Tom Wilson, it's Shatner playing T.J. Hooker. Just about going, my god, something's wrong with this camp.
There's too many kids, not enough adults.
What is it, Captain? Are you not having any fun with us kids? Better movie. You're right. You win. All right, note takers. Anything else you want to touch before we wrap this game up? I think we did a good job.
Yeah, I think so.
Damn it, Thomas. I mean, honestly, because otherwise we can give our final judgment.
I'm fine with that. Unless Matt...
I haven't said is that you could make an argument this film is about overscheduling kids versus unstructured free play, because all the camps trying to send them to, computer camp, military camp, are all very activity-focused, whereas, you know, the camp that they do is pretty much... The only time they do any kind of organized activities is when Van Welker is having them do the Olympics.
But that's the joke, though, is because when the parents come, they all show that they're totally capable of doing what they could have done in the real camp.
Yeah.
They do the organized.
The joke is, yeah, and the unorganized, like, so the Welker shows up, gives them that organization, and they have more fun than their random, unstructured play. Like, they almost prove their parents' point.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and of course, the point of it is too is you're right. I mean, you're talking about a more recent issue. Like this movie's like what 24 years old now.
Yeah, I still remember getting to go as far as I wanted. Like,
yeah, I mean, like age. When we were at summer camp when I was a kid, like there's very little structure. We had to do certain merit badges for like 3 hours a day, but the other six, like literally, like 6 hours a day we were occupied. The other 17, 18 that we were awake, we didn't sleep, right? We did nothing. We played cards. We played volleyball. We ran around. We did.
Did you totally
fires,
renovate
setting
the
fires?
Camp?
Yeah, totally. We built a car from scratch.
Okay.
That just was sitting.
When did
that
there was
happen?
A girls' camp across the way, and like we were trying to like get over there to like to go.
We
dancing.
Had a disco. I'm sorry, I'm merging two movies. Yeah, I apologize. Right.
I lost 6 pounds by cutting out cake because I got bored with candy. Yeah, but no, I mean, the thing about this movie is they realized that they needed the structure. And so they just, the thing was, his dad wanted him to go to computer camp. So they simulate hacking NORAD. They pretend to put on the play Annie. The best was the military dad, who they just put in a foxhole and started throwing fireworks at for 4 straight hours or whatever. Oh, that was kind of fun.
And it actually worked. That's the best part, because I know what the structure of military camp is. I had a friend who went to it. It's not quite fully boot camp. It's very structured. It's very diligent. It's supposed to teach, you know, discipline and such as that. There's no war play.
With live rounds. With
even fake rounds.
Yeah, no.
Well, he was the point. Van Welker's warrior persona was someone who was apparently scary enough to intimidate Zach into doing various things that the previous Steelgrave, you know, commandant could not. So maybe his dad would think, "Oh, this guy is so hardcore; he uses live ammunition."
Well, I mean, you're right. That's the gag. But at the end of the day, I like them futzing around with the dad. Like, the best thing is the parents kind of get their comeuppance until they accidentally don't. Like, he's like, I know that guy. That's Mr. Wozniak. Peter Scolari, who plays Mudd's dad, is just kind of all over the place. Let's give us our final judgment. Matt, why don't we start with you? We'll end with Thomas since it was his movie. Go ahead.
I in my blog review, I just gave it a 7.5 out of 10. It was entertaining when it was entertaining. It was kind of dragged in the middle and end. And plus, again, these characters, some of the kids act a lot older than they are, because to me, they all look like they were 12.
Sure. Keiko.
Well, you know, there was a major nostalgia factor going on for me, and I think that might be why I enjoyed it more. I enjoyed Christopher Lloyd. The car wash scene was my favorite. The scene in his cabin when the doctor was there and he was trying to woo her and Mudd fell asleep and he put him in his room was my second favorite.
Yeah.
I feel like if you watched this movie when you were a child, you should watch it. And if you are still a child, you should watch it.
Yeah.
But if you didn't see this movie as a child, you might skip it because I don't know that it would be worth it for you.
Nailed it. Perfectly fine. Tommy boy.
I actually completely agree with that. If you're a kid, this is still a fun movie to watch. It kind of has the Dexter's Laboratory effect, a place that is your own, that is away from parents, which is great. If you remember this and have any nostalgia for it, it's worth another watch. There's a few jokes you probably didn't get as a kid you'll get now, or things you're like, wait, seriously?
Yeah.
Or just the none of this works, which is still in its own effect entertaining for me, and I enjoyed that. But if you didn't watch this as a kid and now you're an adult, this isn't even going to be like, oh, yeah, I remember teen comedies like that. No, it's going to be like, this is really stupid. So I'm really glad I watched this by myself, because I'm pretty sure my wife didn't watch this as a kid, and I think there'd have been a level of frustration about midway through this that I got to avoid by watching this on my own.
So we're just beginning this new season, and what I've noticed is already going to become the problem is what I call the skipping stone effect, which is that when you throw a stone in a category like this, you're going to pick either the worst of the worst or the best of the best. There's nothing in between, because you're not going to pick the mediocre movies in the middle. The neat thing about this one is this is the plot of every single one of these precocious kid movies. Yeah. A kid has a problem. they decide they're going to solve it with kid power. And a group of kids, sometimes there's usually an adult who's either part of it or against it. This one had both, but you know, same idea. They're going to go all the way along until something happens. Mud gets burned. And then the adult's going to need to step in and say, "Oh, Mud, we've gone too far. You've got to back out." And he goes, "No, we're going to stick out the rest of the summer. Party on, dudes." And then the summer ends with that issue that goes too far. They resolve it. That's how all of these movies work. It can be the Mighty Ducks, where Coach Bombay goes out on a date with a coach for the other team. It could be the Big Green, where they accidentally throw the game so he could be with a girl. It doesn't matter what it is. The problem is we chose either the really good ones or the really crappy movies. But this is the one that most resembles that plot. So, to all three of your points, I kind of enjoyed a lot of this movie. To Matt's point, that middle section, it has a very saggy second act. But there are bits to it that I think are just really top-notch. And all of them are around Chris Lloyd. And it just reminds me, I wish he was in more stuff, but he doesn't need to be. So yeah, he's just not going to do
it. He doesn't do much. And I love, because there's a Suburban Commando.
Yeah.
And his line, like, "I was frozen today." And like occasionally he shows up at conventions. And I remember there's a clip out there of somebody asking, can you say that? And he goes, "I was frozen today." And you're just like,
don't.
You're like, don't.
Don't.
But it's funny because he's like.
He was in a movie recently called I Am Not a Serial Killer, where he is really creepy.
I can see that.
Yeah, just do it. Like, I miss him in things.
I want him in more things. He's almost like
90.
No. the woman, she's in Sister Act. She's also Professor McGonagall. Maggie Smith. She's like, he's that much, almost that much of a recluse. Like, just doesn't deal with people. That comes out very rarely, does his movies, and goes back to being on his own.
I imagine there's some, like, local playhouse where he, like, puts on, like, Shakespeare every year. Because, like, I get the feeling he acts, but he's like, I'll just do it, you know, I'll do it for the community theater. Whatever. Yeah. So, he's not on this episode, but next month, we're curated by Daniel, and I'll just tell you the title. Check out the Facebook group or check out the webpage, and you'll get his explanation of it. But it's just called We Thought It Was Cool in College. So tune in next week and every future week as we put another piece of your past on trial. On Facebook, you can check it out. I will announce the winner of the What Movie We Should Have Done But Didn't Do poll, and it should end up as a Patreon episode for next year's summer reruns. So tune in next week, and we'll put another piece of your past on file. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Candace Burns, and executive produced by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. It is produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Quinn, and Thomas Herman. We are a proud member of the ESO Network and a product of Dude Letter Podcasting. Our theme is Surf Shimmy by Kevin McLeod. Find it at incomptech.com. It is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3 license. And thanks.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.